Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
WICC Bridgeport, WEPE HD2 Westport, WPLR HD2 New Haven. Locally owned by Connoisseur Media, Southern Connecticut's news and information leader. WICC 600.
Tony and Melissa in the morning. This is the time on Mondays that we get to talk to Governor Ned Lamont, the latest on COVID-19 and how it's impacting Connecticut. He joins us live on the phone line. Governor, thank you for being with us. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. Good morning, Melissa.
So, Governor, the White House is calling this week the worst yet. Any intel as to why that is and what Connecticut is facing this week?
Connecticut is facing the fact that in Fairfield County, our hospitals are bending but not breaking. We plan for this. We've expanded capacity. You know, we did at Southern Connecticut in the field house there. We still got some capacity in terms of ventilators and PPE. But, you know, every week it gets a little closer. And frankly, you know that New Haven now is the county that has the fastest accelerating infections and hospitalizations as the virus heads north. And but the good news for our hospital system is people, we're still hanging together and hanging tough.
Would you recommend that people avoid grocery stores and pharmacies this week?
Look, I would. Absolutely. You got to get food somehow. You know, don't go in with your family. Go in alone. Really focus on the, you know, six feet intervals, social distancing, keep your distance. We've been patrolling. We've been going to grocery stores. And I think primarily people are taking that seriously. And there's a lot of friendly neighborhood policing, too. People are saying, please keep your distance to their friends and neighbors. That's so important, especially this month.
Yeah, and Governor, we've had a number of questions. We've seen them in news headlines, but also some people who have reached out to us directly asking about this. Do you have any updates on the six-week-old who passed away? We know that this child tested positive in post-mortem, but do we know if this child was a preemie, had underlying conditions, anything like that? Because we know a lot of parents are, they are expecting children or they have young ones at home, and they're really freaked out by this.
All I can tell you is what we said before, that the child did test positive for COVID-19. Cause of death, everybody who dies is something that may be related to COVID-19. And obviously, if you have underlying conditions, this is what we're tracking so seriously right now. That obviously increases the risk of fatality dramatically. So it is just perhaps a contributing factor. That's all we want people to know. Look, I think without the underlying conditions, you're much more likely to have a safe birth.
Okay. And then we also noticed that you doubled your incentive to nursing home workers who are treating COVID-19 patients or residents, I should say. Newstime reported that it was a nursing home CEO who said you made plans too public too soon. What's your response to that? And what's the latest on separating residents in designated homes?
I've got to separate people who have COVID from those who do not in the nursing homes, because as we found out in Kirkland, Washington, and frankly, in our own nursing homes, it is such an infection factory there. So too soon, I wish I had done it even sooner. But we're negotiating with nursing home operators. We're trying to open up those nursing homes that are closed so I can make them a COVID-only facility, get those people who are infected with COVID in otherwise healthy nursing home over to the COVID-only facility. And there's a little more risk there. The nursing operators have asked for higher compensation to take care of those people, and we've had to accommodate that.
We're speaking with Governor Ned Lamont. He's been very generous with his time around here the last couple of weeks, and we certainly do appreciate that. Governor, we want to pass along some listener questions. One listener asks about jury duty. He can't find anything on the government website, but we know courthouses have limited hours and push back cases.
That's a really good question. I can tell you that all non-essential, including jury trials, have been put off. we're closing down courthouses. So if we don't have instruction on our sites on that, I will follow up on that, Tony.
Okay, please do. Thank you.
Great question. Also, Janet asks about daycare costs. She says, are companies responsible for paying salaries for parents whose daycare is closed for their children?
What I can tell you is that through generous donors, first of all, we've opened up daycare for first responders in and around 26, 28 different hospitals right now. I can tell you that we're ramping up of daycare for a broader group of people, including grocery workers and other essential on the front lines. I'll have to see exactly where we are on the subsidies for that. And I'll get back to you so you can answer that question more specifically.
Governor, one listener asked, any update on when the kids will go back to school?
Right now, as you know, it's April 22nd, and I have a strong presumption it's going to get pushed off past that date. I'm waiting for Miguel Cardona to tell us what the chances are of having a school year that opens at all before the end of school at the end of June. Direction on that in a few days, I think.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I know some people were even asking, Governor, if, you know, they finish the semester at home, is that also going to impact summer school? Like, will summer school be in session or are we probably going to wait for everything until September if we were to push things back?
That's a good question. I can't postulate what we look like in July and August, but I'm pretty strong in terms of May and even June that we're going to be still under some type of our self-quarantining here. So, Let me hold it at that for now.
Okay. No, that's fair. And then we actually got a question from Sandy Clarkson, who says you're doing great and she appreciates your leadership. She asks, given the unemployment system, how do we communicate the correct information to the state? I don't know how complicated it is. As you know, Tony and I are still working full time, but a lot of people are not as lucky to have that. So I think she's asking, you know, how exactly do we know what the correct information the state's looking for to file for unemployment?
Kurt Westby, our commissioner of labor, is going to never forgive me, but my understanding is he's working aggressively on a workaround. Give us another couple of days. If that works, we're going to be able to speed up the delivery of those unemployment comp checks very soon, say within 2 weeks. And right now we got a 5-6 week lag time. As you know, in the meantime, Tony and Melissa, we're working hard to get people there to answer calls to begin the processing by hand just because our technical system has been overwhelmed. We have 20 times more unemployment claims than we've ever had, ever, in a 1-2 week basis.
It's very hard to fathom, but it's so true. It's, you know, there are things, Governor, that I was saying, Tony and I were saying last week. What we appreciate about you is not the fact that, you know, only the fact that you get on the show with us twice a week, but that you're so open and transparent about this whole thing. Like you said, there are questions that, you know, you're still trying to work out at the top level. And we just appreciate, you know, just the openness you've had with our show, with our listeners. And certainly we do appreciate you taking the time twice a week to talk to us. We're going to have you again on Friday.
These
right?
are good questions, by the way. I mean, a jury duty, for example, I got to say,
we didn't think of that.
About as much as we can. We don't think about everything. So I got to get back to people with that.
No, we really appreciate it because it's not like you don't have a lot on your plate or anything. So we appreciate it. And yeah, we'll keep these questions handy. And certainly when we check back in with you on Friday, we'll see if there's anything further. Obviously, we're going to keep in touch with you. But we really do appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. It's the holiest of weeks. So keep the faith, everybody. We're going to get through this.
Joining us here right now is State Senator Tony Wong. He joins us every single Monday at around this time. Senator Wong, it's a pleasure to have you here this morning. How are you, sir?
It's always good to be with you.
You know, you wrote an op-ed this weekend about mental health during the pandemic. What exactly are your concerns? Can you lay that all out for us?
Well, I think ultimately just listening to all the news, watching the news and hearing these jarring stories, it can be extremely unsettling. And the anxiety and the emotional turmoil from the unknown dangers, it really is an incredible roll of emotions that we're going through. Unprecedented, and to hear that it could be our generation's 9/11, it's these kind of jolting news that really unsettles the emotion. And all that combined with the current social distancing and the isolation, we really need to address the pandemic head on, but also it's not just the coronavirus that we need to be concerned about, but we also need to be concerned about the mental health and well-being of all of us across different sectors that really need to be addressed head on as well. We really need to take care of people's health overall, not just physical, but mental as well.
So, Senator Wong, I guess you're absolutely right. I think that this is something we've talked to we have a counselor that comes on every week, Jenny Curry, who has been talking through some of these things, and we'll talk to her again tomorrow about this. And you're right. I mean, we try to work through some of these issues. I guess one of my big jarring questions right now, every hospital is obviously completely bogged down by the coronavirus, understandably so. A lot of practices have had to shut down because either they've given up their PPE. They've been told not to do non-emergency procedures. And if you're somebody who is a counselor or you are somebody who works on some of these things, a therapist, you also have shut down your practices. So do you know if the state has anything set up to help people who are struggling with mental health right now?
Absolutely. And we all respond to stress in different ways, regardless of age. And there are also guilt and shame because they may infect other people in that research. So, yes, we can. So, for example, the United Way of Connecticut 211 provides counseling support for those in need. You can call them anytime. And Connecticut's one of the few states that gives, when you call 211, directly to mental health support lines and suicide prevention if these emotional can be so unsettling. So the 211 is a great resource to get counseling support for anyone. And there is a crisis text line that can be reached by texting TALK to 741-741. That's a resource that the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention provides in regards to people that are going through a crisis mode. At any kind of a crisis, people are there to listen to you. And you're right. Healthcare providers are so preoccupied, but there is always a resource and mechanism to help people. You know, I think it's critical that our mental health is as much a public health concern as the coronavirus. You know, and we're going to be different. America's going to be significantly different after the pandemic passes. And the choices we make in regards to prioritization and how we provide support mechanism is critical. It really is an opportunity for us to remind people resiliency and being upbeat can be challenging, and we need to always be there to support each other. And I want to acknowledge that, you know, it's always good to be a precursor to the governor coming on at 8 o'clock. So please say hello to the governor, and truly I appreciate as a legislator his leadership and his engagement in this whole process. He's been extremely positive as well.
Absolutely. His guidance and his leadership has been second to none through this whole thing, Senator Wong. You know, we're talking with State Senator Tony Wong here this morning, as we do every Monday at this time. And you know, it kind of depends on the individual as well. I know people are going through, you know, some hard times as far as money goes. You know, I get it. That could throw you into a tailspin. But it depends on the individual. You know, my wife and I, you know, I hope that this pandemic ends tomorrow and we go back to our lives the way that it was. But, you know, it for us, it's not such a bad thing to be stuck in the house doing some chores and watching television and just taking it easy. But then you get my son, who's used to going giddy on, as we say in Italian. You know, he's got to go. He can't just stay in one spot at one time. He's ready to go stir crazy.
Well, I think it's a reminder that when we have these kind of uncertainties, the emotion of all the information we're getting, the data points, the gut-wrenching stories from loss from this pandemic, but also the economic losses of businesses and people we know. Mm. And as people go through that whole emotion, it is gut-wrenching and it is so devastating. I think it's important to remind everybody that you have your health, you have your loved ones, and that this too shall pass. And that there are people through the resources we talk about that will support you in getting through this. There is nothing more important for the moment to know that there are people there to support you. And I think this wonderful idea with regards to cards to help our businesses and our frontline that ICC is doing is fantastic. Mm. The rainbow, the idea of seeing a rainbow and sharing it, these are things that we can do. But I will always remind people that are struggling right now, there is nothing more important for your health and safety and to maintain that, because not only are you important, but the people who love you are important as we go through this very difficult time.
Yeah, and I did want to ask you before we let you go, Senator, in your op-ed, were there any suggestions? I know, like you said, 2-on-1 providing counseling support, crisis text line that you could reach. Are there ways just at home that we can kind of take a step back and realize maybe I am one of those people who I'm struggling. It may not be something, you know, where you're talking about suicide, but there are people who I think, you know, it's hard to recognize that this for some people is the first time they're going through a depression.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I think first and foremost, we need to acknowledge our vulnerability. You know, people react very differently. And the fact is, we need to talk about the idea of suicide prevention. We need to talk about the idea of emotional vulnerability, because those are social stigmas that we need to move away from. You know, if somebody had a broken leg, if somebody's struggling through a physical illness, we are able to talk about it. But the idea of feeling of isolation and emotional duress, mental health stigmas, and suicide ideal thoughts, we need to address our vulnerabilities, and we need to be able to share that. We're human, and our resiliency may suffer, our patience, and we can't allow pride, stigma, or fear to stand in the way of getting help. People are there, and the pain doesn't go away. We need to reach out, and we need to connect to ensure that we are going to be able to move forward in a positive way and know that people are there for you. I think that's the most important thing I could leave you, is to remind everybody there are so many good and wonderful people out there that are there for people. Give us a chance to share.
Tony, perfect note to end on. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next Monday, if not sooner.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for all that you're doing.
With us here on the telephone line is Juanita with Fairfield County's Community Foundation. Juanita, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Tony. I'm doing fine. How about yourself? Hope everybody's safe and healthy with you.
So far, so good. Knock on wood, everybody's doing good. But, hey, it's a day-to-day process, right? For anyone who doesn't know much about the Fairfield County Community Foundation, what are you guys all about? Can you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Oh, absolutely. What we are all about is making sure that people who have charitable intention and care about their community, we connect people who to the greatest needs and issues in Fairfield County. We're all about closing the opportunity gap and how we use philanthropy and our donors who are interested in helping their neighbors close that gap. So we manage funds and we really support the nonprofit community by helping them do their jobs better in terms of addressing the needs of our most vulnerable populations.
And we know that the FCCF launched its resiliency fund a couple of weeks ago. Actually, that's when we had you on, Juanita, and it was very exciting. Now, you've raised more than $1 million since we last talked to you. Where are you guys at this morning? How much money have you raised?
Actually, we're pretty close to $1.5 million in terms of dollars raised.
Wow.
We are also asking people in terms of pledges and contributions to also get the dollars in the door so that we can get them out. We've already granted over $500,000 in grants to the nonprofits. Obviously, the needs are coming in actually faster. We have about $2 million in requests and about $1.5 million so far in funds. So it's always a struggle to keep up with the need because this crisis has been so dramatically impactful on our most vulnerable peoples. Basic needs, food, safety, shelter. So it's a challenge, but we're glad we're able to do some part of that to help.
All right. Juanita, we understand that you had a grant challenge. How did that go?
Well, we had one grant challenge of $100,000 from an anonymous donor who said for donations under $10,000, they would match them up to $100,000. We met that challenge. We now have a new challenge. Another anonymous donor has offered a $500,000 grant. So any donation up to $10,000 will be matched dollar for dollar up to $500,000. We are really excited about that second challenge because what it means is you make your contribution, you double the value of your contribution. So if you contribute $1,000, we will get $2,000. If you contribute $100, it'll be $200. And this is just to let everyone know that they can participate and double the value of their contribution helping us meet this new challenge.
Yeah, and you know, Juanita, one thing that I'm strongly aware of, and I thank God for it every day, is that you have enough food on the table and a roof over your head. And sometimes we take that for granted.
That's very, very true. As a matter of fact, that's a big part of what this is all about. We've already distributed these grants to over 30 nonprofit organizations. And from the $500,000 that we have distributed, almost half are related, frankly, to physical and mental health. And then another 30% are related to housing and economic security, which we include food under that. And then 25% to education, because as you know, with all of the schools closed, learning at home is a challenge, childcare is a challenge. So those are the areas that we have seen the most need here in Fairfield County and growing by the day as more people are struggling, unemployed, unemployment, and all of those other pieces. I think before things start kicking in, we are really feeling an immediate need to make sure that we're addressing the most important gaps right now.
Yeah, we're speaking with Juanita, who's with the Fairfield County's Community Foundation, talking a little bit about the COVID-19, the resiliency fund that has been set up just about 2 weeks ago. How do you decide, Juanita, which nonprofits get some of this money?
Well, we have an open grant process. People submit an application, which is very streamlined against our current, you know, guidelines. And based on the number of people they're serving, the agency and, you know, the needs that they're making, how many people they can reach and how effective that organization is, this is where we are. That's how we decide. We have what I call domain subject matter experts on staff, people who are experts. They know the nonprofits. They know who's providing really good support services, whether it's in housing or healthcare, you know, the community clinics, those kinds of organizations. So we decide based on where we think the greatest need is and the organization's reputation in serving the most people most effectively with the quality services.
Oh, and Juanita, if people want to help or donate, what can they do?
They can. All they have to do is go to our website, fccfoundation.org. Whether you want to help or you want to apply for a grant, that's the website to go to, and we make it very easy for you. And in addition, we also have for our nonprofits what we call a resources webpage. So we update that regularly to any information we find out that is providing support services, whether it's trainings, financial resources, any resources that they need. As we learn about them and what's available, we put that up on the web as well.
Juanita, you guys are doing some great work. Keep it up, because there are people out there that have a need, and we thank you so much for doing the best you can to fill that need.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we're in a position to be able to help, and thank you for giving us some time to talk about all of this and helping us get the word out, because there is so much need, and we have a chance to do something right now.